you in the 06010.
Welcome to Fantasy Focus. Today's podcast is presented by Geico. You can watch us every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on ESPN Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube feeds, as well as the ESPN app. And you can download Fantasy Focus wherever you get your podcast. And with that, we say good morning. Today's cast includes Field and Stefania and Roy. That's all you got?
You got a grunt.
Good morning, Roy.
Oi. That's all I got. That's the end of my Roy
Kent
lines.
End of the
fit is over. I'm going to get changed. That's all I got.
That's it.
And scene.
I have two lines. Growling. Boy.
Oy.
That's all I got. I can't do the accent, so it's just like I'll work in some lines occasionally throughout the show if I could think of them on the spot. But
okay.
So for those that aren't able to watch the podcast Field, can you describe the way that Mike Clay looks different than he normally does?
Mike Clay looks like dollar store Roy Kent right now.
Yes.
Because he is wearing an all black suit, which is very Roy-esque. Roy prefers the leather jacket, but the suit jacket on occasion as well. He's got an AFC Richmond shirt. Did your wife Mandy make the patch for you?
She did not. I ordered this one.
Oh wow!
Before I realized she had that skill, but you.
Wow, you think you know?
Let's just say, wait 24 hours, right?
Yeah, you might figure out just how crafty Mike's wife is. She is so talented in so many ways, but that will be another conversation tomorrow. The best part about this all, Daniel, is that Mike did his own makeup today.
Oh, it's so great,
and not like TV makeup. Like this
That's
was
so good.
So classic Mike Clay right here.
Yeah.
Good. So basically, I painted on the rest of my beard. Or I filled in my beard, I should say, because I can't grow hair here like mm-hmm. Daniel Dopp can.
Yeah.
So I had to kind of fill it in, puffed up the eyebrows like Roy.
Eyebrows. That was the first thing that I noticed when Stefania and I both, when we walked in, so, the first thing we noticed
little,
was eyebrows.
Actually, behind the curtain. So
yes.
We come in, we wear masks when we enter the building. So right. When Mike and I first walked in studio, we both had our masks on. And all I could see, and the studio was kind of dark, not brightly lit like it is for the show. And all I could see was sort of the vague outline of Mike's eyebrows and his hair. And I kept thinking, did he try and do, you know, like what we ladies might do, like amplify our eyebrows? And I didn't want to say anything because I thought maybe it went wrong. And I didn't want to embarrass him. And it took a while for him to then take off his mask and show me. In the meantime, I thought he had an eyebrow disaster.
But here's
and I was feeling
bad. The biggest problem here is that Stefania has not seen Ted Lasso yet.
Wow. What?
Right?
That's pretty bad.
Never,
okay,
not once.
Bring on the abuse. You know why? I'll tell you. It's on my, you know how you have the like watch list?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's there, but everybody keeps telling me I'm going to cry. And I don't want to watch things that make me cry unless I'm in the mood to cry, which doesn't happen very often. So I'm usually down for like true crime and action and, you know, things like Succession, which are mean people.
Right.
But I want to watch Ted Lasso. I'm just afraid I'm going to get all emotional and weepy, and I don't want to do
that. Okay, well, here's my suggestion. Just whenever that day comes that you're prepared to get emotional and weepy, just watch all 24 episodes.
Because
two seasons are out.
I love
so
Jason
good.
Sudeikis. So.
And it's only like 1% of the time.
Yeah. Right?
No, less than that you're sad. There's just good feel-good moments.
Oh, I thought you were thinking happy tears to find you. There's like a little bit of sadness in it, but that show, every episode, at the end of it, I look at my wife and we'll just say, you just feel better about yourself for watching that. Like, you just feel better about it.
Yeah.
It's a great show. A lot of perspective on life. A lot of lessons on life. And that we could probably be reminded of more frequently than just once every Friday when the Ted Lasso episodes launch each week. Good job, Mike. I feel like Ted Lasso is going to be a popular costume this year on Halloween.
Perhaps,
getting some news?
Perhaps even on the show.
Perhaps. We'll find out tomorrow. Let's get right into some news. And what's old is new again. As the New Orleans Saints have traded for Mark Ingram. That's right. The Houston Texans have shipped Ingram back to the place that he began his career, just 90 yards shy of becoming the Saints' all-time leading rusher. At one point, it felt like he would have come up short. And now it feels like he will inevitably become the Saints' all-time leading rusher. Mike, what was your reaction when you saw this trade from Mark Ingram?
Oi, that's what it was.
I thought I was hoping
Anger.
You would say. Yeah.
No, actually, it was quite the opposite. It was more of probably a Ted Lasso reaction. It was good, right? I mean, do you remember when Ingram and Kamara were together? They had a lot of fun. They were fun to watch in the press conferences after games and all that stuff. So from that standpoint, it's exciting to have those two back together. But I feel like it's good news. I think it's better from an NFL standpoint than a fantasy standpoint.
100%.
Because Alvin Kamara needs a little break, right? I mean, there's just too much on his shoulders. I'm worried he's not going to make it through the season because this is usage we've never seen from him. You know, you look at it this season, 19.0 carries a game. He's played 83% of the snaps for them. His previous career highs, 13.4 carries, 69% of the snaps. And it's showing up in his efficiency, 3.68 yards per carry. That's not like Kamara, right? We're used to open lanes and big plays and explosiveness in the passing game. We haven't really had as much of that this season. It's just grinding through, just hammering them on running back dives at the, you know, between the tackles. And he could use a little break. And, you know, and I think that was the idea with Latavius Murray. It didn't work out. That Tony Jones was the plan there. He's on IR.
Yeah.
Now you bring in Ingram, and I think he could hold down the fort and handle 7-8 carries a game and give Kamara a break. So I think it's good news for his longevity this season, perhaps for his efficiency. Might take away a couple touches, but I think from a fantasy standpoint, he's pretty much the value's the same here.
Yeah, I agree on that. I think it probably like eliminates the possibility of Alvin Kamara being like the runaway potential number one running back in fantasy, which there is a world that existed. Not that Derrick Henry is not incredible, but because Alvin Kamara is such a prodigious receiver, he had 10 catches this past week.
Yeah.
He had 20 plus carries and 10 catches last week. Like, that's rare. Derrick Henry is not going to do that probably in any week in his career unless something really, really unique happens. So a little bit of insurance for the New Orleans Saints. Do you think he's worth rostering now only because of the possibility that something happened to Alvin Kamara?
I think he's an end-of-bench guy. You know, I don't think
at best
on a weekly basis you're not going to start him, right?
Yeah,
at least I don't think so unless that offense just gets humming and he starts getting all these goal line opportunities. But
sure. But with the lack of passing proficiency right now, I don't know that he's any more efficient as a runner there than he was in Houston when he was averaging just 3.2 yards per carry. Yeah. Let's go to Houston just for a second here, Mike. Tough to play anybody on this offense not named Brandon Cooks. I would assume the next man up here is not one man, it would actually be multiple players. I think that's probably part of the issue is that maybe Philip Lindsay's stock goes up a little bit. Maybe David Johnson's stock goes up a little bit. Maybe Rex Burkhead gets a bit more run on offense. Maybe Scotty Phillips, a player from Ole Miss, they signed an undrafted free agent in 2020. They like maybe all of them see a bit of an upward tick, but I can't imagine there's a surefire starter on this roster.
Yeah, I don't think it's surefire, but I think a few more touches will funnel to David Johnson and Philip Lindsay, you know, based on what they've done so far this season. So David Johnson's already hanging in a 10-11% target share range, and the offense could be better, remember. Now, you have Tyrod Taylor back.
Coming. Yeah.
They scored almost as many touchdowns with Tyrod in a game and a half than they have with David Mills in the past 5.5 games. It's almost the same number. So they could potentially score more points. That could raise the floor of these guys. So Johnson, I think, could jump into the back end RB2 conversation. He should be on rosters. Philip Lindsay, end of bench sort of guy. You know, who knows? He could handle 12 carries a game. It's possible. Won't be involved in the passing game, but I think those are 1 and 2 right now, and that's how they should be valued.
Keep an eye on that one. They play on Sunday against the Los Angeles Rams. Not an easy task. Stefania, let's get to the injury updates. And my radar's up here. Dak Prescott. Calf injury, we know he suffered it back in week 7 in the final play against week 6 against the Patriots, actually. And it seems like the narrative has been, oh, he'll be fine for week 8. I'm not saying that he is not going to play this upcoming Sunday, but it feels a little bit less certain at this point.
Well, I think, I don't think it's really changed. What I would say is it's always been qualified as this. Dak Prescott is definitely feeling better. The bye came at the perfect time for him. He's making progress, just as they hoped and expected he would be. But everyone is very concerned, as they should be, with any kind of soft tissue injury, especially these calf injuries, which we know can feel good until you're working at top speed and then it becomes a problem. Everyone's basically trying to hedge bets against further injury risk for Dak. So he can look great in everything they've asked him to do so far, and there's still uncertainty about what happens when you put him in a real live game and ask him to play 4 quarters. And I think that's what it's going to come down to. And every day they're pushing him a little bit more to try and gauge how does he respond to that increased activity. I was told this morning that he looks very good and right now is on track to play, but it will come down at the end to whether they think the risk is low enough that they're comfortable putting him out there.
Okay, they play Sunday night against the Minnesota Vikings. Let's go to Cleveland, Stefania, where Baker Mayfield, as we know, missed their last game. How's it looking for this next game against the Steelers?
Well, yesterday when he was asked the question if he had a chance to be out there, his answer was one word. It was absolutely. I think much has been made about this fracture in Baker Mayfield's shoulder. First of all, the Cleveland medical staff is excellent. They would not be putting him out there at undue risk. And a lot of this is because the bruising associated with that fractured shoulder shuts down your rotator cuff. And so your rotator cuff is very important to actually trying to protect your shoulder. He's not using that non-throwing arm in a throwing motion, but just in terms of providing any sort of anchor for that shoulder in the joint. You remember he was wearing that harness when he aggravated the shoulder. So the harness isn't foolproof in the sense that you can still aggravate the injury. And they want to make sure that the bone ultimately heals as it should. But functionality is the test, that and pain tolerance. And that's why you saw him out there, if you saw clips from practice, throwing like 20, 25-yard passes. They'll press him a little more in practice if he continues to do well. He's taking the majority of first-team reps. I've seen a lot of different chatter on this. I think ultimately I'm comfortable with where the medical staff is allowing this decision to be made. And Baker said if he feels like he's going to hurt the team by not being 100%, ultimately he won't go. But if he can do it, he will. And that's where we stand.
Big game for them in the AFC North against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Let's go to Monday Night Football, Stefania, and basically every Giant skill player. Let's run through them all. Begin wherever you want.
Well, you know, it's hard because with them playing Monday night, right, we don't have to have official practice reports until now. I will say this. If Jordan Ronan, who you should all be following because of the way he covers the Giants, has basically been documenting what the activity of every single injured player is. And he told us that yesterday they were all outside, but they were working on the side with the rehab staff. And his assessment at that point was, it's going to be really close on time. We've got Saquon Barkley with the ankle, as you recall, ankle injuries, missed a couple games, but that's the ankle on the opposite side from his ACL reconstructed knee. So there's concerns about bringing him back too quickly from that regard. Sterling Shepard with a hamstring issue. Kenny Galladay with a knee injury. Remember, he hyperextended his knee. And then Kadarius Toney with an ankle. And so we really don't have clarity and probably won't until we get more towards Friday's practice, because we have to see how they respond to the work. It's going to be very close for most of them.
Yeah. Monday Night Football, that's a big one, because there are potentially four players that could be in your lineup, or all four of them could be out. Let's move forward here, Stefania, to Deebo Samuel. And this one caught my attention yesterday for the 49ers.
Mine too, because I'm tired of reporting on 49ers injuries. And Deebo Samuel now with the latest to be added with what seems to be the injury that's got my attention, as you mentioned, Field, around the league. I mean, the number of calf strains we're seeing in high-profile players. I actually reached out to a couple of folks to see what they thought about this, because there just seemed to be so many and we don't really have a great explanation for it. A lot of hypotheses, but there's no real true answer. In any case, Deebo Samuel added to the list of 49ers with a calf injury. Jimmy G had one. George Kittle's still out with one. But he was riding the bike yesterday and seems to be not serious in the scope like George Kittle, where they knew he was going to be out for a while. So they hope to have Deebo Samuel this weekend.
Field, do you think this means Kyle Shanahan will use Brandon Ayuk again?
I'm not going to guess on Brandon Ayuk. Yeah. I'm just like, there are certain players you just take yourself out of the business on. And
listen, I will say
this. Who has any idea?
No, I will tell you this. And the people who are there covering the team all the time, and I've talked to a bunch of them, everybody is puzzled. Nobody knows what's going to be the trigger in terms of when Brandon Ayuk will see more. Kyle Shanahan did say this. He said he's seen more from him lately that puts him closer to what he saw last year than what he was before. Take that for what it's worth.
Okay. I don't know what that's worth, to be honest with you. So we'll just keep moving forward. Let's go to our Thursday night football preview. And, of course, we have the Arizona Cardinals hosting the Green Bay Packers. Their winning percentage combined is 9-29. That is the highest combined winning percentage for two teams playing on a Thursday night game in October or later ever. A big-time Thursday night matchup with some notable exceptions who will not be on the field. We'll get to all the Packers' wide receiver latest in just a minute, but let's begin with their quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. And Mike, this was the question that we posed yesterday. Aaron Rodgers will not have, not to spoil too many things, of course, Devontae Adams and Alan Lazard. David Bakhtiari still not playing for them. Their center, Josh Myers, recently placed on IR. If you had the option, would you bench Aaron Rodgers in a 10-team league?
I think it depends on your options, right? But I think it's a possibility of all weeks to do it. I think it could be. I have him ranked 12th this week. Now, look, he's been good as of late, right? He's the number 8 scoring fantasy quarterback. He has had 19-plus fantasy points in 6 consecutive games. 20th in pass attempts. You know, there hasn't been a lot of volume. Some of that's game script, but it is the offensive scheme as well. He's 7th in passing touchdowns. That has kind of offset that. You mentioned he's missing the key receivers, but the key here really, I think, is the matchup, right? Arizona, I know they're not going to have J.J. Watt, but they've done really good on the defensive side of the football. Third fewest fantasy points to quarterbacks, fewest over expected so far. So even if you adjust for volume, they've been elite this year. They've allowed one weekly finish better than 17th this season. That's Kirk Cousins back in week two. That's how good they have been. Fourth fewest yards, fifth most sacks. Again, you're losing J.J. Watt, so that might come down a little bit. Nonetheless, extremely tough matchup on the road with a short week. Missing your top targets. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to think maybe Rodgers stumbles a little bit this week. Just a little bit. Now, I still have him 12th. Still a back-end QB1, but there are some reservations.
Yeah, and I think probably the counterpoint that anybody will fall back on is that he's Aaron Rodgers, right? And prime time, and it seems like sometimes when adversity mounts, Rodgers performs at his best. Matthew and I had a long conversation on this one yesterday, Daniel, about Aaron Rodgers versus Kirk Cousins. I have Kirk Cousins. He has Aaron Rodgers. Daniel, what do you got?
No, I mean, that was going to be my question, is if you have somebody like Aaron Rodgers on your bench, obviously
like
you don't
Kirk
always...
Cousins, you mean.
Or, sorry.
Yep.
If you have Aaron Rodgers on your roster and you don't have Kirk Cousins, he's out there and he's available, is this the kind of matchup where you're not obviously dropping Aaron Rodgers, but would you drop someone else, an end-of-the-bench guy, in order to pick Kirk Cousins up in order to play him in front of Rodgers?
Yeah, that was kind of the crux of our debate yesterday, was like Matthew wasn't so sure that you can afford to drop somebody at the end of your bench because it's possible that Kirk Cousins outscores Aaron Rodgers this weekend, but let's say he outscores him by like 2 points. Is it worth sacrificing that player on the end of your bench? Probably goes back to like the age-old argument of like it just depends on who you have. I would argue yes. Like there are some teams that are loaded with great, great benches, but I haven't seen too many of those where like even in a relatively deep league, the end, or even a shallow league, like, you know, I mean, either way, like I haven't seen too many benches where I can't find one player to move off of.
Yeah, it's like I'm trying to think like a Michael Carter type, you're not dropping, like if he's at the end of your bench in a shallower league. But if you're talking like DJ Dallas or something, of course, that's totally fine. But your point about it's Aaron Rodgers, that's fair. I mean, he could come out and throw four touchdowns. And by the way, if they're down by 14 throughout most of this game, he's just going to keep throwing, and it might end up being a ton of points on the board. So, I mean, look, I don't think he's an auto bench by any means. Another quarterback I might in this matchup, but, you know, I do have him ranked accordingly.
Let's move forward to the running backs. And, Mike, Aaron Jones has been... okay, recently the number of carries is going down.
You should never settle for okay field.
That's right. Good call, Roy. I've got him top 10 on my board this week. You've got him at 14 on your running back board this week. I don't know why I'm smelling an Aaron Jones game tonight. Do you smell it as well?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm smelling it.
Interesting.
I know it's a bad matchup, but I'm telling you, I'm smelling it. Look, passing game usage.
Yeah, I could see that. Certainly if they feature him kind of like what the Saints did, right, on Monday with Alvin Kamara. I get that. He is the number 7 scoring running back this season. Overall, the production's been good, 10th in touches and yards, but he has 4 of 6 touchdowns in one game. And I looked at it, I was thinking, okay, so why is he kind of falling down the fantasy points or the fantasy standings, if you will? Well, he had that huge game with the 4 touchdowns. Since that point, in his other games, I should say, he's averaging a finish of 26.8. He has 4 finishes outside the top 20. So the production hasn't really been there, aside of that one game where he spiked.
Yeah.
He's kind of disappointed this year. A part of that is them working A.J. Dillon into the offense, of course. And the other part of it is the matchup again. I mentioned the Cardinals really good against the pass. How about against the run? 6 fewest fantasy points to running backs. They've allowed 1 touchdown to running backs this season. 1 touchdown in both facets of the game. They are allowing very high yards per carry, so the touchdowns really driven their fantasy point production. But they've only allowed 3 running backs over 11 points this year. James Robinson, Dalvin Cook, Darrell Henderson. They actually held Derrick Henry to 77 yards. So they did a nice job against him. So there's some pluses, some minuses in there, mostly negatives. And again, with his volume kind of going down, his production kind of going down, I'm a little bit more nervous, I think, than you are.
Yeah, I think this is one of those where all the numbers support everything that you said. But there's so many weird things taking place tonight. Mm-hmm. No Davante Adams, no Alan Lazard, all of a sudden no J.J. Watt, the Packers traveling on a short week that... For all those reasons, I just feel like, to borrow a line from you, Mike, the cream rises, baby. Give me Aaron Jones as a top 10 running back this week.
I think Mike Clay uses that line.
Oh, that's sorry.
I would never say something that optimistic. So.
Oy. Let's get to the wide receivers. And it's sort of like the last men standing, right? Randall Cobb has caught 14 of 18 targets this season. Mike, he is the old faithful for the Green Bay Packers. Is tonight the night for Randall Cobb?
I think it has to be. You would expect him to see seven targets in this game, right? So we're ranking him as a flex option. You know, he had that big game in week four, 5 for 69 and 2 touchdowns. But otherwise, he has 110 yards on 9 catches this season. So the production has not been consistent. The usage hasn't been consistent. In fact, if MVS, we'll talk about, I'm sure, in a second year, was activated for this game and Lazard and Adams were both playing, he might be fourth on the depth chart again, as he was early this season. So I don't have high expectations for him going forward. Also, he'll face the best corner for Arizona, Byron Murphy, in the slot throughout this game. So not everything sets up as great as you might think, but at the same time, again, they just...
Someone has to catch passes,
Someone has to be on the receiving end of the throws. You would expect, again, 6 to 8 targets to go his way. So again, I think low ceiling, most likely, but you should have a respectable floor, at least enough to put in your flex.
I have prepared myself for this comment tonight mentally. All these Packers players are out, and I'm going to ask Stefania about Marquez Valdes-Scantling in a second. Third quarter, Randall Cobb, 3rd and 14, hauls in a 21-yard catch over the middle with run after catch. Gets up, points his hand forward, first down. Packers driving down, eventually take the lead. That's why the Packers traded for Randall Cobb, right? It's for moments like this,
that'll
right?
That'll be the tweet.
Because Aaron Rodgers prepared for having no wide receivers available other than Randall Cobb. I'm already preparing myself for that moment mentally, Mike. So,
and then Mercedes Lewis will catch the touchdown.
Right, of course, right? Yep. No. It'll be, do they still have, what's their tight end's name? I can't pronounce the
list. Josiah
DeGura. Yeah, their third round pick for Cincinnati a couple of years ago. He'll score a touchdown.
Field, was that your Chris Collinsworth impression? Is that what you,
Sunday night. Sunday night. I don't know. That was just, anybody on Twitter, you name, maybe, I don't know. Troy Aikman's on the call tonight, the analyst for the game. Joe Buck, who's just a machine.
Oh, he's so great.
He is just
so are Hannah Storm and Andrea Kramer.
They're on the call on Thursday Night Football on Amazon Prime as well. So a lot of great options to watch Thursday Night Football. But Stefania, one player who might also be watching the game and not playing in it is Marquez Valdes-Scantling for the Packers. Hasn't played in about a month. What's the latest with his status?
Well, he's with the team in Arizona, so he has a chance to play. They could activate him by today. He's been out for about a month with a hamstring injury. If you've followed Green Bay for a while, you know that they tend to be fairly conservative on returning players from injuries. They certainly don't rush people back. I don't believe they would play him if they felt he was at great risk, but part of it, after you've been out that long, is building up your football conditioning. He was working in individual drills and team drills during the week with the goal of being available for Thursday. I do think this. I think if he's activated, I do think they're going to watch his utilization. Being that he's been out for a while, you might see him in situational plays. They might pull something like what the Patriots do, where they put him in for plays where you know that you can't run the whole length of the field, so you're not tempted to open it up on a hamstring that's coming fresh off an injury. But that doesn't mean he couldn't be in a situation where he's scoring a touchdown, you know, when they get into the red zone. So I do think he wants to play, apparently, and I think it remains a possibility, but check after about 4 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah, 4 o'clock would be the deadline for them to activate Marquez Valdes-Scantling from IR to the active roster. Roll the dice if you want to on one of these Packers wide receivers, but I'm just telling you, we all have no clue how this is going to shake out. Let's talk about Big Bob Tonyan, though, Mike, because he's like maybe the most established pass catcher. And I know Randall Cobb, but still, different phase of his career. The most established young pass catcher on this roster, along with Aaron Jones, could this be a Big Bob Tonyan night tonight?
I think it could be. And, you know, I could tell you about how boom bust he's been this year, right? He's actually been pretty terrible aside of the two games where he found the end zone, which he was okay. But overall, it's been a disappointment. But let's look back to last season. Weeks 3 and 4, Devontae Adams was out. Tonyan scored in one of those games, and then he had the 3-touchdown game against Atlanta. So he scored 4 touchdowns across the two games. That game with the 3 touchdowns, the only game in his career, believe it or not, with more than 1 touchdown. So certainly...
Don't you and Stefania have a board bet on Bob Tonyan?
I know I have one with someone, but I can't remember. Yeah, was it with Mike?
I think it was.
We were talking
touchdowns.
About his touchdown regression, which I said I expected him to regress, but not to be like... You know, invisible
like
in
he
the
is.
Touchdowns.
Yes.
You know what, Mike Clay? It's a long season. We're not even halfway. He's got a chance to catch up.
You might win it tonight.
That's right.
If Fonya wins, I feel great because I have Big Bob Tonyan in the lineup where I could really use him.
Oh,
all right,
I thought you were just cheering for me.
By the way, can I add one quick note here on this matchup? You might be looking at this and thinking, okay, but the Cardinals have allowed the fewest fantasy points to tight ends, right? 39. It's all about the matchup. They play Tennessee, Minnesota, Jacksonville, the Rams, the 49ers without George Kittle.
Right.
the Browns and the Texans. So
which is funny because they used to be player tight ends against Arizona.
By the way.
Right, but they haven't faced any stars yet. I mean,
it was actually Stefania and I who made a big Bob Tonyan.
Uh-huh.
Oh. 6.5 is the over-under. I took the under. Stefania took the over. So Stefania has a chance to cash in.
And you're actually rooting for me.
I'm always rooting for you, Stefania. I don't care. I would like to see myself. You know what? I like to see you win more than I like to see myself win. And I don't see myself win very often, so you tend to win more than I do.
Just at life.
Come back.
Just at life.
Oh, come on. Daniel.
I just really quickly want to say this, and just looking at the board bets, I see that Stefania has a board bet with Matthew. More points on the season, Fitzpatrick or Ben Roethlisberger. Stefania has Ben, and I'm still not sure that Ben's going to win that board bet, even though...
I'm still not sure why we made a bet between Ben and Ryan Fitzpatrick.
We were desperate.
This is your fourth quarterback league?
We were having that conversation.
There was something early in the Peak season. Awesome. We were trying to find something to talk about.
That's like June.
Like 2002 league. Yeah. Like, what is going on there? Jeez.
Who was even deciding between them two? Yeah. Is that like a 20-team league?
You, second quarterback? It was probably a preseason preview where we were like looking for stuff. We're like, okay, how about a board bet?
Oh, you know what? At 5, you guys were at Matthew's 60th birthday party debating Ryan Fitzpatrick and Ben Roethlisberger. Oh, boy. Yeah, the good old days.
It was painful.
We're going to talk about the Cardinals in just a second. Before we do that, I and Roy are going to do some live reads. Roy, you have at it first.
All right, let's do it.
In your best Roy Kent voice.
Yeah, please. I don't know about that. Everyone likes shopping online. See, I can't do it. I can't. I don't got it. I just be angry. But listen, Field. Everyone likes shopping online, but searching for coupon codes is kind of a bummer. So make saving online a breeze with Capital One Shopping. Capital One Shopping is a free tool that instantly searches for available coupon codes and automatically applies them at checkout. Just download Capital One Shopping to your computer and let it do the work for you. So easy, and you don't even need a Capital One card to use it. Capital One Shopping, it's kind of genius. What's in your wallet? Savings and available coupons vary.
Did you say coupons?
He said coupons and then coupons.
Okay.
Coupons and then coupons.
You heard us. Yeah.
I just had a moment when I thought I heard coupons, which is a weird word I've never heard before.
Wrong? Coupon.
I believe it's an alternate pronunciation, but like
might be a Schuylkill County accent. Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe
one of those fix me things, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
What do you guys up to?
It's like Dem coupons.
That's hey, you know what? We can't all be college football national champs. That was a tough one. But every one of us can be an Eckrich National Tailgate champ, and you don't need years of training. You just need Eckrich smoked sausage. To win, you need to show Eckrich how you do every game day. Do you have a special recipe passed down over generations? Or do you dress your sausage with team-colored toppings? Mike, what would be... I guess it would be relish and mayonnaise for the Eagles, probably?
I take bread and put meat on it, and end of sandwich.
Do you lay your deli meat on your sandwich as thick as you lay on the trash tub? However you do you, Eckrich wants to see it in all its glory. Enter at Eckrich.com/tailgate. Eckrich is the official sponsor of the college football playoff. You do you.
There's so little that's still pure in this world. That's why I love Mike Clay, right?
I agree.
I love everything about
the man. I was just trying to be angry about it.
You just don't know how to be angry.
All right, let's talk about the Arizona Cardinals here. Let's zip through this one. Kyler Murray, top 5 for both Mike and I in the ESPN consensus rank. Don't need to overthink this one too much. You are starting Kyler Murray. He has been dynamic basically all season. He has just 2 games under 20 points. He needs 11 rushing yards tonight to become the first player in NFL history with at least 1,500 rushing yards. And I believe, Kyle, you're going to have to stat check me on this one. 6,000 passing yards in his first 40 games. I butchered that stat, but Kyle can clarify it. But the point is, Kyler Murray is really freaking awesome. Let's talk about Chase Edmonds and James Conner, though, here. It's still clear that we have Chase Edmonds over James Conner, Mike. But how much confidence would you have in starting James Conner tonight?
Well, not a lot. I view him as more of a running back 3/flex. You look at their usage so far this season. Edmonds is trailing him by 21 carries, but is out targeting him 33-6. So yeah, it's pretty
huge.
Clear. It's very similar to what they did last year with Kenyon Drake and Edmonds. But I will say this. Connor has scored a lot of the touchdowns. He's been pretty lucky in that department. Edmonds has not. He has 0 touchdowns with an expected total of 2.3. Connor has 6 touchdowns, expected total 4.3. So expect that gap to get closer. We've actually seen Edmonds get the occasional goal line carry. he'll find his way into the end zone a few times. So I do think that'll change. But the production...
Can I ask a question about that? Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but like the idea Matthew. That... Well, I do mean to interrupt you, actually. Sorry. But
it's okay, now it's definitely okay, Matthew.
To ask about that point. Because when I think about James Conner, especially being the guy that I know was getting a ton of goal line work, in an offense that's this efficient, I don't think about the idea of like, you know, it's not like he's scoring two touchdowns a game. Like he's...
He did that twice, right?
He has done that twice.
Four of his six touchdowns.
He has done that twice. Okay. But just the idea of like, this feels sort of ish sustainable because of how good this offense is and because of this is the clear role that James Conner has is I'm the goal line back. Is that, I mean, not to say that you're talking about regression. To me, just as like a regular person, when I look at these, it just feels like this is what James Conner is going to be the rest of the year.
It'll be a good stat to figure out. Is like how many times even does the highest scoring offense in the NFL reach the 5-yard line and in during the course of the season?
Great question.
Because even though you're a really high scoring offense, it doesn't mean that you have a ton of additional, like it might be that the difference between the highest scoring offenses and the like the 12th highest scoring offense is that they just convert more efficiently inside the 5-yard line. It's not necessarily more opportunities.
Yeah, and that's something that I battle with at times because you look at like Seattle early this season where they weren't running any plays. Part of that was because they had a ton of splash plays, right? Yeah. So you don't need to have long drives. Aaron Rodgers' offense is historically below average in offensive snaps per game because of all the long strikes, right? So Cincinnati early this season, remember us arguing about Ja'Marr Chase and where the target volume? Well, that was part of it. You know, it's just so many long touchdowns, and that will regress over time. You need the plays to go up, and that has happened, of course.
I'm not so sure on Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I'm kidding, but
he'll be great. Don't get me wrong; he's off the charts for the best players of all time. You bet against that, but nonetheless, he'll still be terrific. Totally. But anyway, the point is completely valid, so that's fine. To answer your question, look, if we still expected him to get 13 to 15 carries and more targets, yes, I think you could feel pretty good about him. But he's kind of he's in that role, though, where now, first of all, he was out-carried by Chase Edmonds last week. I think it was 15 to 10, right? So that's one concern for him. The other is he's a non-factor in the passing game, right? Yeah. His targets have gone up lately, and that's like one. You know, you get one. Oh, yeah. Good. You know, that's hit the jackpot there, you know? Like, so that those are some concerns. It hurts his ceiling, and you really need those touchdowns. So he's a touchdown-dependent start right now. So I think that's pretty much all I got.
Kyle, by the way, knows that the Packers were the highest scoring offense in football last year. They were 14th in terms of plays run inside the 5-yard line.
Wow.
So they just, it makes sense. Sometimes it's just a matter of how well you convert when you get those opportunities. Stefania, DeAndre Hopkins is on the injury report. It sounds like we're getting some good news, but what's your outlook for him playing tonight?
So here's the story with DeAndre Hopkins, right? He's out of practice, usually one day a week. But when he doesn't practice at all and he comes in questionable, it really comes down to a game time decision. That being said, we often expect him to gut it out. It's what he does. But let's go back to week 3 this year when he had a rib injury that was clearly limiting him. Same pattern as this week. Did not practice at all. Was very questionable coming into the game. We didn't find out a game time decision until the 90 minutes prior to kickoff. And he still played the majority of snaps like he always does, usually out there for 80 to 90% of the offensive snaps. But he only had 3 catches for 21 yards. He was really a non-factor in that game because he was hurt. So we do see that every once in a while. And I say that because with a hamstring injury, the stakes of this game, I expect DeAndre Hopkins to be out there. And Bob McManaman of the Arizona Republic quoted Cliff Kingsbury as saying, given the stakes and the circumstances, he expects that he will play, even though it will officially be a game time decision. But could DeAndre Hopkins have could he struggle to be DeAndre Hopkins in this game? Possibly. We have no idea how serious this injury is for him. He's always battling something, but a hamstring injury in wide receiver is problematic.
I don't actually track this. Kyle probably does, but I'm here to tell you. DeAndre Hopkins by far leads the NFL in most number of weeks in which on Thursday he's called a game time decision and then he actually plays. He's always a game time. He always plays.
No, but the reason
I'm not making fun. I'm just being serious.
No, but the reason I brought up week 3 is because that wasn't like he's always banged up. But you will say, oh, he's not practicing. He's not doing much. That was his pattern in Houston. Was one of the reasons that they butted heads sometimes there. And he's a guy who's known not to need to practice to be really, really productive.
Sure.
But that rib injury was really uncomfortable for him, and it did change the way he played. So that's my point, is a lot of times he's still, we say start him anyway, because he's always got the chance to score. He's scored in 5 out of 7 games already this year, and you expect that to remain a possibility. But sometimes, every once in a while, when the injury's bad enough, he does look different.
Well, part of the reason why he could look different tonight is also because of the matchup, Mike Clay, is tonight, DeAndre Hopkins and Jaire Alexander could face off. And tell us more. I mean, I think people who follow football closely know that Jaire Alexander is one of the best players in the NFL. But tell us more about what this means for DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, so a few things. First of all,
you changed.
Yeah, I did. Well, the reason is because I made the mistake just now quickly checking social media, and everyone's confused as to why, what I did to my face. Like, have I gone full Hollywood? Now I'm doing, like, what Stefania thought. They did. So no one's getting it because I'm wearing a suit and there's no other. So now I got the logo here. So now I'm just like.
That's so great.
Mike did go full Hollywood. That's totally on brand for you, Mike.
Yeah, that's very on
Mike's
brand.
Mike's midlife crisis is hitting early, guys. What's happening?
Came on quick.
I bought a red Corvette. It's outside. Yeah. So so anyway, got the logo now. Maybe a couple people will get the connection that I'm Roy Kent. Anyway. So let's talk about DeAndre Hopkins here. So yeah, you guys talked about this earlier this week about his, kind of essentially trading him high based on his name value, right? Well, you kind of see those concerns. He averaged 88 yards a game last year. He's at 60 this year. And here's the thing. He has 7 touchdowns. His expected total is 4, and he had 6 all of last season. So he's kind of spiked in the touchdown department lately in this season. Is that going to continue going forward? I'm not so sure about that. I'm certainly a little bit worried. But he does have a good matchup this week. Now, I talked earlier about how Arizona really good against the pass and the run this season. Well, one of their weak spots has been essentially that number one corner spot without Jaire Alexander, and specifically left perimeter receivers, which is where DeAndre Hopkins lines up 79% of the time. They've allowed the 10th most fantasy points to that spot. Eric Stokes lines up there quite a bit. He shadowed a lot recently with Jaire Alexander out. Shout out Jamar Chase, 6 for 159 and a touchdown. Shout out Terry McLaurin, 7 for 122 and a touchdown. Both of those guys hit double digits in target. So I do think Stokes will shadow DeAndre Hopkins this week. And again, he may have a bright future. He's a first-round pick field, but he's learning pains so far, we'll say, right? It's been rough the past few weeks. So I think Hopkins in a good spot, actually.
Okay, there you have it. Mike disagrees with my earlier assessment. I make a habit of trying not to check the mentions because sometimes, people are less than kind.
Oh, yeah.
But after Mike said that, I couldn't help but go to the Twitter machine and see what they're saying about Mike. And this is my favorite one so far. Is it just me or is Mike Clay looking like a hipster pre-op Frankenstein? One of these emojis.
I didn't see that one, actually. But you understand now.
Dude, is Mike Clay now dyeing his eyebrows and beard? Has he gone Hollywood asking for a friend?
Amazing.
Those are big eyebrows.
So, see?
I did exaggerate
them. It wasn't
just
me in the studio in the dark.
The eyebrows are real big. Definitely head to the Twitter machine if you like. Well, Mike, we'll have to make sure has a picture up on @FantasyFocus if you don't post one yourself.
So
Mike.
Good. But. So good. All right, let's keep things rolling here. And I'll just ask one last question. Two last questions, I should say. I'll give you an opportunity, Mike. If you would like to choose a Cardinals wide receiver not named DeAndre Hopkins, who would you choose?
No, thank you.
Okay, no, thank you. Yeah. And then last one here, then. Let's just make it quick.
I was going to say Christian Kirk would be the choice. He's 48th in targets receiver right now. It's just, sure. It's all over the map. All three, their secondary receivers have a finish of at least 100th or worse this year. It's just, it's tricky. If I had to pick one though, field, I would go Kirk.
And then Zach Ertz, finally, he was tight end 6 in his Cardinals debut last week. Mike looked good, and they seemed to be making an effort to get him some touches last week. The long touchdown was awesome. Actually, his longest career touchdown catch. But also, he had this reverse near the goal line that he nearly scored and nearly fumbled on. But I feel like they are making an investment in making sure that Zach Ertz gets the ball.
And another reason to be nervous about the secondary receivers and to be nervous about Hopkins' targets going up because they're trying to work in Ertz. His first game at the team field, and he had 5 targets and a carry. I mean, there's clearly some utilization there. He ran 19 of a possible 32 routes. So, yes, Ertz immediately on the tight end one radar. And I think I have him 13th this week, so he's very close in 12-team leagues. But nonetheless, if you're in a spot where you need to start him, I think he's fine.
We'll do a game pick in a second. Quickly, we did mention this earlier, but Stefania, I know you wanted to get in on J.J. Watt.
Yeah, just so everyone's aware, he's expected to undergo season-ending shoulder surgery. He's obviously out for this game. He was injured last week and ended up playing through this shoulder injury. But Adam Schefter reporting yesterday that J.J. Watt's season is over. It's really sad. 5 first years in the league, played all 16 games, and injuries have really taken a toll on him over the second half of his career. So we wish him well in his recovery.
There you have it. Agreed on that. J.J. Watt has been a Warrior for a long, long time. Let's pick this game. I'll go first, and I'm going to do a Mike Clay-like 27-25 Arizona Cardinals win.
Like it. I feel like we've had a lot of, what are they called?
Scorigamis.
Scorigamis. We've had quite a few of them lately. But mine's actually more relatively normal score. Arizona 31-23, so they cover.
Okay. Stefania, who are you taking?
I'm going to take the Cardinals.
Okay. Wow. This is making me nervous. I need someone to pick the Packers or else I'm going to get really nervous.
I know someone who would pick the Packers.
I'd be happy if the Packers won, because in the NFC West, I just can't stand to see somebody running away with it. That's not the Niners.
I am going to take the Arizona Cardinals 31-3.
31-3?
That's right, Aaron Rodgers. You heard me.
You are so wrong on
he's
that.
He's probably watching and now he's going to be angry.
I like Mike's, though.
What's he going to sound like, Mike?
Are you 27-26 Packers. There you go, Phil.
Thank you, Kyle. Let's 27, go.
27-26, good guys.
You are trying when you do that, right? When you do the growl?
Yeah, I mean, I am.
Okay.
I can tell.
Just bad at it.
Are you some sort of like hipster pre-op Frankenstein over there?
Yeah. What does that even mean?
I don't know, but it's funny. All right, let's get to wide receiver cornerback matchups in just a second. But before we do that, this episode is brought to you by Captain Morgan. NFL fans know as the season gets underway, you got to have the right players for all 60 minutes to bring that spark. And sometimes you got to sub someone in to switch things up. Same thing goes for that drink in your hand on game day. So if you're looking to sub in something more refreshing, pour yourself a delicious, crisp Captain Morgan official original spiced rum and ginger. Sub in the captain, Captain Morgan, the official spiced rum of the NFL. Visit CaptainMorgan.com to find Captain near you. Drink responsibly. Captain Morgan Rum Company, New York, New York.
Some of us on this show own or rent our homes. I've been told it's hard work. But you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing to do. It's a good thing too, because you already have so much to do around the house. Go to Geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit Geico.com today. That's Geico.com. And Mike, on behalf of Geico, I just want to say happy Geicoing to you today, knowing that you dressed up for the show.
Thank you. At least someone did around here.
Well, it's a costume? Weird. I thought it was, I thought this was just...
I thought you were just coming in.
You have a moment over there. Let's get to wide receiver quarterback matchup. If you don't read it, you should. Mike Clay writes it every single week. It appears on ESPN+. It is often imitated. It is never duplicated. I say that all the time because I laugh when I see others try to step up to the king of wide receiver cornerback matchups. Mike, there are some really, really good ones today. But let's begin with some upgrades or downgrades. And let's start with the Buffalo Bills. And you'd think that Byron Jones is the highest paid cornerback in the NFL, at least was at one point. So this has got to be bad news for someone like Emmanuel Sanders,
yeah,
right?
Not to mention Xavier Howard on the other side, right?
Yeah.
So you would generally think this is a downgrade, but at some point during the season, we have to stop just looking at how good the players are and focus on more on the actual production that they have allowed, right? So the Dolphins have allowed the third most fantasy points to receivers, the second most over expected. So it's not like it's just heavy volume faced, second most to the perimeter, and six most to the slot. Just across the board, they've struggled badly against this position, and that is what we have to make our decisions on. Now, do I have some concerns that maybe these guys are, you know, fully healthy and turned it around and figure something out because they do have the raw talent? Yes, it's a possibility. But for now, we have to use the information that we have in hand. We also have some information from earlier this season, Field, because these teams played already back in week 2. And in that game, Xavier Howard shadowed Stephon Diggs. Byron Jones shadowed Emmanuel Sanders, and Nick Needham was, Justin Coleman in that game was on Cole Beasley in the slot. Now Nick Needham has replaced Coleman in that position. Diggs has had no trouble with him. You know, he didn't have trouble in that game, 4 for 16, a touchdown. He also shadowed him in week 17 last year, and he had 7 for 76. And actually, if I remember correctly, I don't think the Bills played the whole game. I think that was halftime.
Yep.
It was just all halftime, and he put up that sort of production on him. So, Howard and Jones right now, both top 15 in fantasy points allowed among all defenders, and they were out of game too. So they've had a hard time this year, and you have to lean toward a positive matchup here for Buffalo.
Okay. So Emmanuel Sanders goes up, as we'll call, we'll finish off the touch screen. Let's just rip right through.
Love it.
Noah Igbinoghene. Hello, dude. Where are you in Miami? Miami has a first round pick who has just been relegated to the bench. Yeah. That 2019 draft for Miami, 2020 draft for Miami. looking ill-fated right now at the top of the board. Noah Igbinoghene struggling, Austin Jackson struggling. I'm not ready to declare anything on Tua one way or the other. Hey, the return of Jerry Jeudy, that's great news here, Mike, for the Denver Broncos offense. A guy looked like a breakout superstar in week one before he got hurt. How's the matchup for he and Cortland Sutton and Tim Patrick against the Washington football team?
Yeah, see, here's another one where coming into the season, we would have thought this would be a downgrade. I mean, you already have a really good a defense playing really well. You have Kendall Fuller, who was terrific. You have three good safeties. And then you bring in William Jackson, who was arguably a top 10 corner last year. Should be a dominant defense. Instead, it has been one of the worst defenses in the NFL, right? They've struggled. Second most fantasy points to receivers, most to the perimeter, second most to the slot. They're allowing 46.1 fantasy points per game to wide receivers field. They've allowed at least 39 to receivers in 6 of 7 games. I mean, just across the board, it's been a struggle. So you have William Jackson, you have Kendall Fuller. Both are top 5 in fantasy points allowed among all defenders this season. And Jackson, again, he was out last week with an injury. So you have Sutton on the perimeter 87% of the time, Patrick 76% of the time. They'll see Jackson and the rookie St. Juice on the outside, and then you'll have Fuller in the slot against Jerry Jeudy. If Jackson's out, by the way, you'll have Danny Johnson and slot Fuller will be outside. But nonetheless, this is a team that struggled. You're facing Jerry Jeudy, who we know is a terrific talent, fresh, healthy, coming off the injury. And Cortland Sutton, who, I mean, talk about putting pressure on a defensive backfield. Number one in air yards this season in the entire NFL. They're going to get the ball to him downfield. Even if his targets come down a little bit with Jeudy back, that he gets high-value targets. Goal line, deep downfield, I think he'll be fine.
How would you rank Jeudy and Sutton this week? Do you have Jeudy ahead of Sutton?
I'm going Sutton because mostly because we're not 100% sure he'll play the full game. You know, we don't know. Is there some, maybe he's 90%, 80%. We don't know for sure. So not to mention Sutton's playing really well.
Right.
Sutton's so I'm just leaning Sutton this week, but we'll see how it plays out over the next few weeks.
Last one here is with the return of Jerry Jeudy, even if he's not playing 100% of the snaps this week, he will at some point be. Does that mean Tim Patrick's role just decreases or even gets eliminated entirely?
Yeah, I believe the number is that he does not have a top 20 this season, Tim Patrick. He scored a few touchdowns. He doesn't have a top 20.
But I think you're not looking for a top 20 for him. You're looking for like a serviceable flex, right?
Right, but if he can't get to the top 20 without those guys, is he going to be able to hang on for flex value with them there? I think it's unlikely because you know a Fant handling 20% of the targets and you're still a run-first offense using two running backs. I'll be shocked if Patrick is a consistent flex option.
Yeah, interestingly enough, it's just that prior to last week, he was a top 30 play in 3 of 4 weeks. So I guess over the last 5 weeks, he's been a top 30 play 3 times. So the hope is you can continue to achieve that sort of relevance week in and week out.
But with probably 1/4 of the targets going to Jeudy, that's gonna hurt him for sure.
We shall see.
I think mostly what he'll do is he'll catch a touchdown. Sutton and Jeudy will be up in arms or fan, right? He's going to be that guy the rest of the season.
Let's discuss what I think is the matchup of the weekend on an individual level. It's Marshon Lattimore and Mike Evans. Mike Evans is an incredible player. 3 touchdowns this past week. First player in NFL history with 7 straight 1,000-yard receiving seasons to begin his career. He's on his way to an 8th. But if there has been a player that's been his kryptonite, it's been Marshon Lattimore.
There's no question about it. Generally, you know, when a really good receiver goes up against a really good corner multiple times, one guy wins it one time, the other one wins it the next time. That has not been the case here for the most part. Lattimore has shut him down. He has shadowed Evans 7 times since he was drafted in 2017. You look at his stat lines in those games, and if you're watching a video, you can see the graphic of his numbers during those games, and it's not too good. You know, 5 for 55. He had one good game where he went 7 for 147 and a touchdown way back in 2018. How about this? 4 for 86, 0 catches in one of them. And then last year's where it gets really interesting, okay? And you would not think this, right? Tom Brady's there, right?
Right.
Evans was awesome last year. He should be crushing it in those games. They played 3 times, home was the playoffs. 1 catch for 2 yards and a touchdown. 4 catches for 64 yards, no touchdown, and 1 catch for 3 yards on a touchdown. Wow. That was his 3 stat lines. He was shadowed by Lattimore in all 3 of those games. He's just shut him down. And Lattimore, by the way, you can make the case that he had kind of a down year last year. Was not his best play. This year has not been the case. He's been terrific. He's shadowed 3 times. Devontae Adams, 5 for 56. Terry McLaurin, 4 for 46. And then DK Metcalf, which, I mean, we could play this game. You know, Metcalf is a big man, and he just shoved him to the ground, arguably OPI, went 84 yards for a touchdown. That was it. Yeah, I mean, he had 10 yards on 4 targets the rest of that game. Lattimore did a nice job.
He's a nightmare matchup for most wide receivers. Yeah. I watched that game with significant interest last week, which we all do, but as you guys know, I was down. I said 18 on the podcast. I misspoke. I think I was down like 17.4 or 17. I don't know, whatever the specific number was. I knew what I needed from DK Metcalf. First catch of him for the game goes for 84 yards. I needed 1.7 points after that to win my matchup.
Did you get it?
I did.
You barely, though.
Barely. I won a matchup by 0.62 points. Let me tell you something. I woke up this morning sweating the possibility of stat correction. Like, if you don't think I woke up at 3:30 this morning to check my phone to see if there's stat correction, you are crazy. There was not, fortunately. But the point is that I watched that game, and I was basically watching Marshawn Lattimore in every single play. Mm-hmm. That dude puts the clamps on big wide receivers.
Yeah, so, and he shows up when the matchup is toughest.
He definitely does. So let's ask this question then, Mike. What does it mean for Mike Evans? Are you benching him this week? Are you... I mean, can you?
I don't. I mean, he just scored 3 touchdowns last week, and much like Metcalf, I mean,
he only needs one.
As a good close friend of mine, Mike Clay says, the cream tends to rise.
The cream does rise, Roy. It's a good point here. So, worth noting that Antonio Brown, very unlikely to play on Sunday,
yes,
Daniel. So
yep.
You got to figure that the wide receiver targets funnel right back to Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Maybe the biggest takeaway is you're not benching either of them. But perhaps this is a big Chris Godwin day on Sunday.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That was going to be my question to you, Mike, is understanding that we've had this situation a couple times. Like, is that a bump for Chris Godwin? Because he doesn't make the upgrade necessarily. But does he usually see better days when Mike Evans has Marshawn Lattimore?
That's a good question. And I think that he is in a good spot, right? So he'll mostly be in the slot. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is the slot for
the agitator.
Yes. Yeah. So... I think he is in line. Actually, if I'm ranked, I believe 7th this week, which is probably the highest I've had him ranked all season. So, yes, I do think Godwin will be in good shape. And I hate to say this because last week it did not work out, but Tyler Johnson, I think, could be kind of a post-hype guy this week. He disappointed last week in a good spot, but he was out there for almost every pass play right behind Evans. 87%
of the snaps. 87% of the routes run last week, Tyler Johnson was on the field.
Yeah, and it didn't work out for him. The balls didn't go his way based on the matchups. I think that could change this week, of course, because if Evans isn't open...
And no Antonio Brown, it's just him and Chris Godwin.
Right.
And
Gronk could be back.
Gronk will be back this week.
Yeah. But nonetheless, I think, especially in DFS, that's a way you can look. I know he disappointed last week, but post-type guy.
I got to tell you, that game in New Orleans will be one of the best atmospheres of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Saints fans, they don't get they get very charged up about all NFC South matchups. They love beating the Falcons, but especially since the arrival of Tom Brady, they love playing the Buccaneers, and they haven't had the chance to do so in front of their fans in a normal crowd because Tom Brady, of course, arrived last season. I cannot wait to see what it looks like on Sunday in New Orleans. Let's pivot to a couple of tough rankings calls. And, you know, Mike, I think what happened last year was that Mike Davis played so well in relief of Christian McCaffrey that we assumed that a capable player stepping into the Mike Davis role would have a chance to come close to his production. Chuba Hubbard's going to be a fine NFL player. He was an incredible player in college, but he has not been that great so far filling in for Christian McCaffrey, which will take place for at least one more week. Christian McCaffrey is eligible to play in week 9 against the Patriots. We'll see whether he does, and we'll address that next week. You have a bit more confidence in Hubbard than I do. I think a lot of people are disappointed because last week was supposed to be the fix-me spot for Hubbard, and yet again, he disappointed.
Yeah, he did, but only one top 15 fantasy week, which is not what we saw from Mike Davis earlier last season. But he's had pretty respectable volume, right? I mean, you look at his usage in the 4 games without CMC, 65 carries, 16 targets. That's pretty decent, right? And it's enough volume that we basically, even though he hasn't had a high ceiling, he's still an RB2. Yeah. And we both have him ranked as such, right? I'm 16th or 20th. And that's what he is. He's a mid-range RB2 right now, perhaps without a high ceiling. But then again, if they're at the goal line a few times, which it's hard to predict, but if they're there a few times and he gets the carries, he could score 2 touchdowns. He's going to have that. He's going to have that opportunity. He's going to handle a pretty sizable chunk of the workload. So again, he is what he is. He's a mid-range RB2. And when McCaffrey comes back, he'll be right back up there in the top slot.
Again, McCaffrey eligible to play as soon as week 9. We'll track that one very, very closely next week. I will see whether the Panthers believe he needs even more time, but we cannot wait to see CMC back on the field. This next one's an interesting one, Mike. We have not reached this point where you're adjusting your roster or potentially not utilizing him weekly. but you're actually the lowest ranker on Keenan Allen against the Patriots this week. You have him 20th. I'm presuming it's not about the matchup because the Patriots just lost their top slot corner in Jonathan Jones recently. They've dealt with plenty of injury issues in the secondary, but this might be about sort of the evolving reality for Keenan Allen in this offense.
Yeah, definitely. Miles Bryant should be, he filled in for Jonathan Jones last week. At least still, there was other shifting around in that game, but due to injuries, but we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, it really has nothing to do with the matchup. It has to do with his production this season. Mike Williams is kind of taking control there. The Chargers offense has been kind of up and down, right? They've like, Herbert is like the top scoring fantasy quarterback, or he's 20th. You know, he's been kind of all over the map. But look, Keenan Allen, again, we're just looking at what we're seeing right now. Outside the top 30 receivers in fantasy points, four of his past five games, his targets are pretty good, right? And that's what keeps him in the RB, in the wide receiver two mix, 9.5 per game. But he only has one touchdown this year in six games. I believe he had nine last year. So the touchdowns are down and the production's down, right? A lot of them short area targets aren't adding up to consistent, dominant fantasy production that we're used to. He's just not a wide receiver one right now, and I've adjusted my rankings accordingly.
Yeah, he's averaging 10.7 yards per reception this year. That's actually up compared to where it was last year, but he has really, really benefited from, I mean, next level volume over the past couple of seasons. Yep. Hasn't been quite as dominant so far this year, either in the big play or the touchdown category. I mentioned this yesterday. I was talking with Matthew about Mari Cooper and just sort of where he stacks amongst wide receivers right now. I'm a little down on him, Mike, relative to the rankers, only because, as we discussed yesterday, wide receiver one in week one has not been a top 25 wide receiver in any week since. Do you see something changing with Cooper, or do you attribute this to what we did, which is that they've got a lot of guys who are stepping up in a major way this year and catching useful targets?
And this is the story with Cooper throughout his career, right? He's never finished as a top 10 fantasy receiver, ever.
Crazy,
I mean,
right?
With the reputation he has, you would expect that he has done that already. And to your point, 39 fantasy points in week one, he has a total of 52 in 55 games.
Pretty ridiculous.
It's not
right?
working. They're going to Schultz more often. At times, they just ignore the receivers. I mean, even the last time we saw them, CeeDee Lamb at one point, like halftime, you're like, do we have to worry about this? And then, of course, he was a top scoring receiver for the week. He just went off in the second half and had a crazy game. But that makes me a little nervous, you know, because this offense seemed too good to fail. And they have been good. I mean, don't get me wrong. They're scoring at will. They've been terrific. But the receivers just aren't producing quite as much as we hope for. And the other thing is Michael Gallup could play in this game.
Yeah,
and this is a big contract year for him. And he looked pretty sharp in week one before his injury. He's going to be involved in this offense as well. So, yes, I think there is reason to be a little bit more pessimistic than maybe we were at the beginning of the season. But at the same time, you have Amari Cooper. You're starting Amari Cooper.
A lot of people saying,
oi,
if they drafted Amari Cooper, at least based on how he's played so far recently. Daniel, you were giving me that look like you wanted to say something.
I just want to get through maybe a handful of social questions just
you
while we got the time.
Got it.
But I do want to ask this question first. Michael Gallup is rostered in 51% of leagues. Is he the kind of guy that just based on that offense is a better end of bench player than potentially someone that you're rostering now?
Good end of bench stash, I would argue, because of two things. One, good offense. Two, something happens to either CeeDee Lamb or Amari Cooper, big opportunity.
Uh-huh,
that being said, like, they may say to themselves, Cedric Wilson's been too good to keep off the field.
He's
like,
been pretty great.
They need to, I'm not saying Gallup won't play, but like his role or the role for all those wide receivers might not be as significant as we thought it would have been on paper coming into the season.
Yeah, I'm less worried about that than I think you are. I think it's pretty evident Gallup's a better player there. So I hear what you're saying. But then again, I mean, at times last year, we saw Noah Brown and Cedric Wilson coming into the game at times and keeping those. But then again, they were throwing so much. It was so fast, so high volume. So they're running the ball more often this season. But I'm less concerned about that. The answer is yes. Gallup should absolutely be rostered. And I think we'll rank him worst case scenario as a flex every week, right? Maybe wide receiver three. So.
Wow. Okay. All right. First social question comes from Dylan. Need to flex two of Damian Harris, Devonta Smith, Chuba Hubbard, T. Higgins, and Antonio Gibson. Damian Harris, Devonta Smith, Chuba Hubbard, T. Higgins, and Antonio Gibson.
Yeah, I think it's Damian Harris, and I think it's T. Higgins. T. Higgins had 15 targets last week. He's been pretty steady in the target department all year, and I like the matchup against the Jets on Sunday, who maybe early in the year were stingier defensively, but they have kind of, the personnel has caught up to them, so to speak. And then the Chargers, who the Patriots face on Sunday, are dead last both in rush yards per carry and also rushing yards per game allowed. Wouldn't surprise me if the Patriots try to let things roll through Damian Harris early in that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. I'm going Higgins for sure, and I'm going to lean toward Hubbard. I have him ranked just slightly ahead of Harris. again, just chasing the volume there, the passing down work too. Harris doesn't have that, and you need what he's done the past 2 weeks. You have to get him to 100 yards and a touchdown, or that's going to be tough. I mean, he's just not going to make up for it in the passing game as Hubbard can.
All right, let's go through rapid fire with the rest of these. See as many we can get to. Flex two of these from Lasso: Michael Pittman, Jerry Jeudy, Eli Mitchell, half point PPR.
Is that Ted Lasso? I'll go Mitchell and Pittman.
I will go with Mitchell and Pittman as well, especially in half PPR.
I like it. This one comes from Loss. Would you consider the Cardinals' defense tonight against an Aaron Rodgers-led team that doesn't have his top pass catchers?
I consider it.
Yeah, seventh on my board. They've been awesome. No Watt, which is unfortunate, but they've still been very good, so sure.
Luke wants to know, would you flex Randall Cobb over Eli Mitchell or Michael Carter?
No,
I would not.
Okay. Kyle wants to know, Darrell Williams or Jerry Jeudy for my flex?
Is Kyle Soppy?
Let's say
it is not. It's Kyle G. I would go with
I'm going Williams.
I want to go with Williams as well. A lot of volume there. Decent matchup. I know the Giants have been tough in some ways defensively, but I sense some frustration about some of the run defense recently.
Starting a guy the first week back off of injury too. Whenever I'm not sure. I just always want to see it. Scott, are you trading Daryl Henderson thinking that he's at peak value right now? He started the season pretty nicely, guys.
I don't think so. I mean, he's going to be the running back, you would think, for the rest of the year. Cam Akers, obviously. So I'd hang tight with Daryl Henderson.
If he's healthy the rest of the way, he should be a top five, at worst, top seven fantasy running back. Yeah, too much volume and an elite offense. There's so much to like there.
He's been really, really good so far. All right, Mike's going to be back with us on Sunday for Fantasy Football Now. My apologies. Roy will be back with us on Sunday for Fantasy Football Now. In the meantime, the rest of the crew will be back tomorrow, Friday, for a full preview show. Stefania will have all of her injury updates. We'll recap Thursday Night Football. We will answer the most important questions for Week 8 of the NFL regular season. For Stefania and Daniel and Roy on field, we'll talk to you guys on Friday.
Boy.
Peace out.
He's a NASCAR guy with a basement shrine, a Langford fan for life. Chargers are off to a terrible start, but that won't change his mind. Matching up all the cornerbacks, touchdown regression and weekly stats. But if your team falls flat, he's the one to blame. He's a brainiac, brainiac on the case. Projections that can put us in first place. He's a brainiac, brainiac, he's my clay.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.